Jenkins, you're up. You have 15 minutes. Do you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
All right. Well, then I won't tell you that it's your responsibility to keep track of your time because the 15 minutes is on the clock and you may begin whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Robert Jenkins on behalf of Mr. Brian Bovar, who asked this honorable court to grant his petition. Your Honor, this...
petition was granted. The issue now is
yes, reverse
the conviction, so
yes, Your Honor.
Get you on the right track here. So.
Thank you, Your Honor, that you reverse the conviction for possession, use of a firearm during the commission of murder. As I'm sure you're aware, this is a situation where there are inconsistent verdicts.
And you seem to recognize on brief that the law of inconsistent verdicts is juries are allowed to do that. That they can do that, and so your argument essentially has to be that there was insufficient evidence for essentially both crimes in this case, given that the crime he was convicted for is not the predicate offense, it's the subsequent offense, and so there would have to be insufficient evidence to allow a rational jury to conclude that he was guilty. Correct.
Correct, Your Honor, as well, certainly my perspective, Your Honor, with respect to what he was convicted of, I believe that there was, the jury concluded that there was insufficient evidence by acquitting him of the first degree murder.
If Uncle James's testimony is believed, what element of either offense was missing?
Well, if his testimony is believed, Your Honor, my recollection, I don't believe that Uncle James testified that he actually witnessed Mr. Brian Bovar in possession of any firearm. And he certainly didn't testify that he witnessed Brian Bovar commit first-degree murder.
But there was testimony that Brian Bovar said that he had shot him and we needed to go, right?
That is true, Your Honor. And Your Honor, while I understand the standard in that you now sit in a position to look at the evidence in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth, I still don't believe that would put the court in a position to ignore.
Let me interrupt you because it seems to be what this comes down to. Your assignment of error, which is what we have to be guided by, is simply that the trial court, the circuit court, erred in not setting aside the verdict of conviction here on the use of the firearm charge, correct?
Correct.
Now, as Judge Russell's alluded to, that's a pretty broad assignment of error, and you know, you're simply saying the trial court should have set it aside. Well, you've conceded, I gather, that, and certainly Reed versus Commonwealth governs the notion that you can't set it aside just because it's inconsistent with the other verdict of acquittal in the other case. So, from a sufficiency standpoint, then, it seems to me our job is pretty easy because we simply have to look at as Judge Russell just alluded to, we simply have to look at the record in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth. Is there testimony or other evidence that supports each of the elements, which I think you'd have to say there is? And then you have the statute itself, which says, and I'll emphasize the language, that the use of a firearm charge is a separate and distinct felony. So it seems to me that language suggests the General Assembly intended it to stand alone, or at least independent, of any other related offense that might have occurred. So if we apply, is there a third option that I'm not seeing here? Because it seems to me, if we get past Reed and say that the inconsistent verdict doesn't get you where you want to go, that only leaves us with the sufficiency, and I don't see how you get there from here if we simply look at the evidence that was presented and ignore the verdict, because it's the verdict that's inconsistent, not the evidence.
I certainly agree, Your Honor, and I do recognize that Reed certainly presents a challenge. But, Your Honor, when we look at the evidence that was submitted, again, there were no eyewitnesses at all, whether it be Uncle James or anyone else who testified credibly that they witnessed
Mr.
Bovar.
But you don't need eyewitnesses.
Well,
it's kind of a crime.
Certainly, Your Honor, but if there's no eyewitnesses, no firearm recovered from Brian Bovar, no one testified that they ever saw Brian Bovar on that day or any other day with a firearm, Your Honor.
But of course, given what they testified he said, none of that would be necessary. We are in this odd place, which the inconsistent cases place us here, but this is probably no help to you, certainly, that it seems ridiculous to say that the jury credited the testimony of Uncle James and the other people about what Brian Bolar said, because if they credited it, they'd have found him guilty not just of use of the in its totality. They wouldn't have found him just guilty of use of a firearm in the commission of a murder. They would have found him guilty of, well, the murder. I mean, those two things go together. If you believe all of the testimony that was favorable to the Commonwealth, you would inexorably would lead to the conclusion that he was guilty of both, if you credited all that testimony. Whether for leniency or for some other reason that makes little sense as a matter of pure logic, they rejected the Commonwealth's evidence on the murder, even though that was the same exact same evidence that they used to convict him for use of the firearm in the commission of the murder. But then that gets us back to Reed, which says, for our purposes on appeal, juries get to do illogical things from time to time, so long as there was evidence to support what they did convict him of, which we then have to view in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth, which is Bolar's statement that I shot the guy, lack of a better description.
Yes, Your Honor, and I certainly agree, and I concede that there was testimony by Uncle James Bolar, that Mr. Brian Bolar had made that statement to him. I just asked this court to look at the totality of all the evidence that was submitted and whether or not that was worthy of any belief. James?
In the abstract.
Yes.
If the jury believed that Brian Bolar said and meant, I shot him, let's go, that would be enough to support a conviction for both murder and use of the firearm if the jury believed it, wouldn't it?
Yes, Your Honor. It would certainly require the jury to reject or ignore all the other evidence that was submitted that would have suggested that it was James Bolar and not Brian Bolar who actually committed the offense.
But juries get to do that.
It certainly is within the purview of the jury. Unless the court has any further questions, I would submit.
Thank you, Mr. Jenkins. Ms. Adelfio, you have 15 minutes to use as you please.
Good morning. May it please the court, Catherine Adelfio on behalf of the Commonwealth. As the panel has recognized, this is a pretty straightforward case. This court should affirm the decision of the Alexandria Circuit Court because inconsistent verdicts are permissible in Virginia and because an independent analysis of the evidence, independent from the acquittal for the murder, shows that there is sufficient evidence to convict. And I'll just quickly run through the evidence. Mr. Johnson testified that the defendant chased the victim with a gun. Johnson heard gunshots, and then he saw the defendant throw the gun away in the trash can. Both Uncle James and Mr. Scott testified that the defendant confessed to him. Curtis Davis testified that the defendant asked him to pick up the gun from the trash can, and in fact, Davis found the trash can where the defendant had directed him. And then finally, the defendant's cell phone records.
And he found a gun.
That's correct, Your Honor. I'm sorry if I didn't say that. Yes. And then finally, the cell phone records indicated that the cell phone that the defendant was using was moving towards the scene of the murder prior to the murder and then was moving away from the site after the murder.
Absent Reed in the federal Justice Rehnquist line, and it's just a matter of whose ox is being gored, there is no logical way to view these verdicts as making any type of consistent sense.
That's correct, Your Honor, but the jurisprudence of Virginia has recognized that juries might act with leniency, they might just make a mistake, and because the government doesn't have an opportunity to contest an acquittal, basically this is something that Virginia jurists have decided is an acceptable result during a jury trial.
And just to be clear, it's not just one court of appeals case sitting out there alone. It's a number of Virginia appellate cases as well as U.S. Supreme Court cases.
That's correct, Your Honor. I would note that in one of the cases that the defendant cited, Wolf, the Wolf court actually cited United States versus Powell, which was a United States Supreme Court case stating that inconsistent jury verdicts are acceptable.
We don't go into the black box of the jury because we don't know whose ox is being gored.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Virginia probably does more than any other state to protect the sanctity of what goes on in jury deliberation room.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And unless the court has any other questions, I just ask that you affirm the decision of the Circuit Court of Alexandria. Thank you.
Mr. Jenkins, do you have anything else to add? You have time. You can use it or not. It's up to you.
Thank you. I do not.
Thank you.
We are going to come down and greet